muffin.
I'm aware that the briefing on the regulation by our own decision. And I really don't want us to get track on that decision. But maybe it's important that we remind ourselves what is it that we wanted to achieve with the briefing. We wanted certainty on certain provisions of the regulations, particularly around areas where there were some uncertainty, not only for ourselves, stakeholders in the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. Not really as a matter of substantive engagement with the regulation. That was not our intention. And if that is my correct recollection of why this presentation is made there, it would therefore be my view once more, Chapter 7, before that any further attempt to call the department to make presentation here would actually be problematic. Problematic in two sense. One, it will hamstring the department from finalizing and operationalizing, the regulation. Because technically it would mean that they'll have to come and get our ratification. I don't think our intention was to ratify the regulation, unless I'm wrong. So if that is correct, I would really move that. This would be a very, very first and the last briefing, which gives us really a track of where the department is going in terms of operationalization of the BU plan. Then from there, the matter must be handed to the department, and the department must run with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Honorable
Member. That was my understanding. Hence, I requested the BG to be part of this meeting, but this information came from the department by the legislature. And also, I have to apologize to the members for putting the document today. We got it yesterday from the department. And this is about it. I'm talking to their constituency. Members of their constituency from their private to their efforts to come here. having said that, we do apologize. I'm not going to give this opportunity to DG, just to open for us.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, before you hand over to the DG, I just want to make a request that we don't go through all these documents page by page. I think the department can just highlight the very important issues in these documents so that you can look at them in that way. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable member, I'm not going to support you on that one. It's only this document you want a thorough report, and you've got now up to 1 o'clock, you've got enough time to go through this. What are the
well, thank you, Madam Chair, and happy greetings to members of the Select Committee and other stakeholders here present. I'm humbled by your request, Madam Chair, to be present on the occasion of this deliberation. And I'm happy to hear that the stated intention that this is meant to be brief. It is very seldom that even when you give briefings, that they are seldom brief. They are always long and detailed. I suppose that's one of the contradictions of the English language, that briefs or briefings are never brief. I'm happy to hear also that we will be adjourning not later than 1300 hours, Madam Chair. We have prepared a presentation which Ms. Edmund Muller will take us through. The presentation will cover a range of issues that I would imagine the Select Committee raised the last time. On which it would now like to be addressed, and I'm certain that Ms. Muller would do that. There's just one point I would like to make, which is that there's a very unusual provision in this piece of legislation, and this I've already bounced off one of the statements. State law advisors here present. And he has not as yet expressed a formal opinion on it, so I don't want to bind the office of the chief state law advisor. But the point being this, regulations are normally an executive function to deal with. But this piece of legislation requires that the NCOP not only be consulted, but that the NCOP must give approval of the regulation. And I think that's a controversial point. And I can refer you, Madam Chair, to Section 3, bracket 3 of this Act, which says that for the proper application of subsection 2, bracket 2, the Minister must, in terms of Section 146, bracket 6 of the Constitution, submit all regulations made under this Act and which affect a province to the National Council of Provinces for approval. As to what that means, in reality, remains uncertain. Because ordinarily, the passing of regulations is an executive function, because regulations are subordinate legislation. Because the main act empowers the minister to do so. But what this one does is it requires the minister to come back to the National Council of Provinces for approval. I shudder to think what will happen each time we seek to effect an amendment to the regulations to give practical expression of the intent of the legislature, including the SCOP. In certain instances where we find in practice that the regulations are not assisting us in achieving that. So it's a matter that I suggest we will seek counsel of the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor as to exactly what this means and whether this is something that has slipped past their desk without them noticing. Because this seems to me quite a controversial point, especially because it is under the heading conflict with other legislation. It seems to me that there is an inherent conflict in this piece of legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Muller will give us the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Captain, I want to agree with you, address the issue first by saying that the formulation is not absolute. It doesn't say the legislation is in conflict, that in the event, and therefore, on that basis, Captain, let's allow proceedings to continue as planned for this meeting. And after that, as an in-house matter, we need to make a determination as to whether indeed there's any conflict with any other legislation. And if there is such, then we follow normal processes as stipulated in this, I think it's clause 3. So that would be my proposal, Chairperson, just building on what the DG has said. Because that in the event of a conflict between a section of this act and any provincial legislation relating to blah, 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 blah. So we can make that determination, and on the basis of that, then we can determine the way forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Dr. Marisa, before giving the Department of Justice, I want the department to take up the first round of background, the two acts were finalized and signed by the president. What we did in February 2007, we appointed a service provider to draft the regulation for us. Luckily, the service provider is here, so they can also address any questions maybe. There was a decision that the Department of Justice would draw the regulations on the children's court as well as abduction. And the draft of the legislation, or rather the regulation, is here to make a presentation. What we did for the regulation was 3 books, which was quite comprehensive documentation. On 27 June 2008, we published a full comment. We printed about 1,000. We distributed about, let's say, more than 900 hard copies. We also emailed this to people. And we published it for 45 days up until the 11th of August. Then we received a request for an extension. We gave them a week extension up to the 22nd of August. We received 53 comments from stakeholders. What we did was look at all the comments. We worked through all the comments. It was myself, Nakakunolo, and Pia. And what we did is we looked at the comments and we deliberate on the comments that we received, and the ones that we think should enhance the regulation. we made the necessary changes in the regulations. So what we can do now is we can maybe take it to the presentation, and if you need to know what proposals we made for changes, we can also take you through that document. The draft regulations consist of the regulations as described in the Act. There's also norms and standards of not everything. There's only norms and standards on partial care, on ECG, child detection, prevention and early intervention, child and youth care centers, and drop-in centers. Then there's also forms attached. There's form 1, 2, 4, 7, 9. Now, if you look at the three documents, it's three very thick, comprehensive documents that we work through. Just for your information. What we also did is we received the comments on cycle development, and the comments for justice went to one of the officials in the legal section in the Justice Department. So what we can do now is we're going to take you through a presentation on what the regulations consist of, and then we've got the other documents. If there's some and you are interested in the changes, there's not a lot of changes. I've got the changes here. Then we can also on the PowerPoint just show you the changes. What we would like to discuss in detail is the genetic testing, circumcision, because that was new in the legislation. We would also specifically want to focus on diabetic households, the regulations for that, and also for cancer foster care, and then we've received comments on child and youth care centers. So maybe we will not take you through all the comments on child and youth care centers, because we've received quite a lot of comments.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nino. I just want to explain why we got separate regulations for justice and for social development. In the Act, in Chapter 4, specifically stipulated that justice should develop the regulations for Chapter 4, the current court, and also for abduction, because those chapters are mainly the responsibility of the Department of Justice. But we have tried by all means to analyze the processes to ensure that the publication and the gazetting of the regulations for public comment went out at the same time. And we're also trying very hard that the implementation of these regulations is also taking place at the same time. And that's why the Department of Justice is here to do this implementation together with the authors. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mabito. Dr. Mabito is now a DDG of the department at the committee from the regulations. We are now going to call you Dr. DDG Mabito. Thank you very much. Over to you, the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Dion Rodman. I'm Deputy DG Rodman.
Do you have a document from the department?
Yes, we made available a set of draft regulations to the committee.
Before I do so, I just indicate
that I'm responsible for legislation in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and with me is Mr. Lawrence Bassett. He's the Chief Director in our legislative component, and he will give you a brief briefing on the regulations. It will be very brief, Chair, because as far as the status of the regulations are concerned, I would like just to mention that it is still in draft form. We are still working on the regulations. There are a number of issues that we still need to look at. In fact, late last night, there was still a meeting with my DG and the people from the components in our department who will take responsibility for the implementation of these regulations. There is an implementation plan. They are working on that as well. It's been done simultaneously with the drafting of the regulations. We are also preparing an implementation plan. That is why those people could not be here today because they were still working with the DG on the regulations as well as the implementation plan. So the regulations, Chair, that you have before you, really that is a draft set of regulations. Mr. Bassett will speak to that, but there's a fair amount of financial implications relating to the regulations. We still need to do a costing of the regulations. It must then be approved by the Ministry of Social Development. And because of the financial implications, we will also have to approach the Minister of Finance because of the financial implications relating to the regulations. My name is John Ratman. I am the Deputy Director General in the Department responsible for legislation, which includes regulations, subordinate legislation. Chair, with that as background, I would like just to ask then Mr. Bassett to give you a brief overview of the content of our regulations as it has now been drafted. But please, Chair, please bear in mind that this is just a draft set of regulations. It will be changed. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to Mr. Minister, and if you can help introduce yourself again.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Lawrence Bassett. I'm Chief Director in the Legislation Section of the Department of Justice. As Mr. Radman has mentioned, it has been circulated, I think it was sent to yesterday or the day before. In fairness to my colleagues at Social Development, we were alerted to the possibility of possibly having to come down and do a briefing earlier during the course of last week. We did our best to try and get the regulations in a format that we can present them today. But as Mr. Radman has said, there are draft regulations, and there's still the formal consultation process that's required to take place between the Minister of Justice and the Minister of Social Development. Perhaps I should at that point point out that the enabling provisions in the Children's Act, the two broad enabling provisions in the Children's Act, which have a bearing on the Department of Social Development. The one is in Chapter 4, dealing with children's courts, and that's Section 75. In terms of that, can you hear me? In terms of Section 75, the Minister of Justice and Constitution of Development must make regular. Chair, the documents are at front page, starting with Government Notice, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Children's Act Regulations. The document is 55 pages. That it was received, I was given the confirmation that it had been received.
So what we do, honourable members, we give me an opportunity to continue whereas we are going to make copies, so we give the department to start their presentation. Honourable members, there's no document from that.
Sorry, Chair, I was really under the impression that it had been received and circulated.
But now you are going to be delayed. But before that, Dr. Margaret, can you explain to the House the process before the Canal Draft? That's what we can get the Canal Draft and go to the Chateau Bay to the background to the Canal.
My name is Kisele Gulesele, Chief Director of the Services Department of Social Development. I'm a company guy who was looking at something that couldn't get to a
question. This morning, I had a great discussion with Jim Adeko, because my understanding was that this is a final draft. Now, it's a draft that the final draft that will come later on. So after the approval of the chairperson of the House, going to approve the number in the assembly. Now, as members, we need to know that process, how the stages before the finalization. Why the final draft has to go to the chairperson of the NCOP? What are the bigger implications?
That is regulated by the Act of the Section of the Legal Structure Section 3, Subsection 3 of the Section 3. It requires that it must be, the regulation must be approved by the Commission. Now, ordinarily, although they make reference to the NCOP, the regulations or even the minister would still come forward to the committee for consideration. The committee will then make its recommendations to the NCOP itself, so on whether or not the regulation must be approved. But my understanding was that this process here is just a briefing exercise in the case of the department will still have to make a formal presentation through the Office of the Minister to the chairperson of the NCOP. And I think this is intended for the committee to familiarize itself with the technical provisions of the regulation and make initial impression that indicate whether or not we need to change it in the future. And I think you can still engage with us if we, by the time we formally bring the regulation forward. But I think what we also need to take into account, Madam Chair, is the fact that for the act to be implemented, both the Department of Justice and the Department of Social Development must finalize their part of the regulation.
Hello, Mr. President. Thank you very much. Honorable Kekin, welcome. I apologize for the rendered to late arrival. And also to welcome Mangila Gazi. Ms. Mela, may you proceed, ma'am?
Thank you, Kate Vincent. I will start with the general provisions in the regulation. We will see there's only three definitions. There's only a definition on the register, that means the child protection register, and then the act, and that means the child act. Then there is general provisions in terms of the intervals of provincial profiles. Provincial profiles must be declared on a provincial level in terms of strategies that the act mentions. The act mentions the strategy on partial care.
You all have this document, is it this minute?
Yeah.
You all have it? Honorable member, Stephen? Do you have this document? I don't have it. Thank you, Ms. Miller.
ETD, child protection, prevention and early intervention programs, and then there's also provision for child immunity centers and drop-in centers. So in other words, there must be strategies compiled on a provincial level. Then when we go to the cultural and religious practices, I'm not going to go into the detail. We can go after this presentation because if I go into the detail now, we will start jumping from one presentation to another. The function has got, there was the regulations made on the genetic testing, consent to undergo the genetic testing, the manner of conducting the genetic testing, that it should be conducted in a hygienic way by certain people, the suitability of persons to perform the genetic testing, the disclosure of the results, impact of guidelines, and seized by health. Then in male circumcision, we've only got the consent issue was made regulations and the religious to include cultural and traditional circumcision. Then on parental rights and responsibilities, there was regulations made on the general requirements of the agreement. In other words, that will have identified in particular the content of the agreement, this will be the care, how the care will take place, the contract, the financial responsibility, then the mediation in the dispute, that will be dealt with by the family after the social workers, and we've also added social service succession in certain of these sections. Then child participation is very important. We know throughout the legislation that child participation is mentioned throughout the whole voter act. Then we go to clause 14, it's the application is parenting plan. There is the application for registration, that must also be done, the application will be made to the family advocate, preparation for assistance by a family advocate, social worker, psychologist, after mediation by a social worker or other suitably qualified person. In 16, in particular, relating to the co-exercise of parental responsibility that may be included in the parenting plan. That also consists of details of the people involved, who's got, who's sharing parental rights and responsibility, how the contact will take place, financial responsibility, and also decisions that will be made around the children. Child participation is also mentioned there, we've got a regulation for that also. Then requirements for suitable persons qualified to mediate the dispute. So people must have the expertise in mediation, they must have the qualification, and it will be social workers, social service professionals, and psychologists. I'm just mentioning a few, I can't mention everything to a person, that will be read in the regulation. Then chapter 4, clause 19, is the medical information concerning genetic parents of a child born out of artificial fertilization or surrogacy. If anybody or a child makes an inquiry about this, counseling must take place around this whole application and really make information available. Then we go to partial care. The regulations talk about category for partial care. We change it to site, because the act talks about site for partial care. There's the exemption for registration, there's norms and standards. The norms and standards you will find in the norms and standards document as the second document of the regulation. Application for registration for the partial care is done at the, at the province with the HOD. And they also consider the application. Then there's the whole management of the partial care. It's about registered files, reports that such a place will have to keep. Then the staff skills, they must at least be able to implement the program, write reports, and implement some of the other programs. I haven't mentioned everything yet, it can be read in the regulation. Then there's a closure of such a place can take place by a written notice. Then the assignment of functions to the municipality, that is throughout the legislation, that functions will be assigned if they are able to render the services. In terms of development, there's norms and standards, there's comprehensive norms and standards in the norms and standards document, that's the tax to the United. Apply for registration, that's also the ECD, the partial care facilities, the early childhood development is the program. The application will also take place at the provincial level at the HOD. Certain information from the applicant will need to be filled in. What I can maybe just mention at this stage, if you, anybody reads the regulation, the forms are mentioned throughout the regulation. So if you've got a regulation and certain information is needed, there is a form for that. So if you go back to the forms, then you will see what information is in the forms and what is exactly required. Then the early childhood development, also the people running and managing these programs, as I have a national certificate in ECD, for example, and it's mentioned in more detail in the regulation. Then there's the assessment and monitoring of the program. At the moment that you assess or monitoring the program, we need to have some standards for that, and as I said, 2.9 provides the minimum standards. Here is also the assignment that comes into the municipality, so I'm not going to go into detail if they are ready or able to render the service, these functions will be transferred to them. Then the child protection system, there's also minimum standards in the document. There's a criteria for child protection organizations that they should be a registered NGO. There's two issues if the NGO and a designated, so they can register as a child protection organization, and then they can also apply to become a designated child protection organization. And throughout the legislation, we mentioned the child protection organization or a designated child protection organization. Then quality assurance prior to the withdrawal of the designation. So quality assurance is very important, and you can't do quality assurance if you don't have proper medical standards. Then there is the report of abuse and deliberate neglect to a designated child protection organization, and that is the Form 4, the Form 25. That is a new form, and that's in the regulation. Then there's a request for the removal of the offender. That happens by way of a written notice by the South African Police Service. Then there's a risk assessment framework. If you look at the regulations, it's a very comprehensive framework in terms of a risk assessment as well as indicators. It's quite a comprehensive framework. And then we've got the criteria for determining suitable persons to investigate child abuse and neglect. That is a social worker, a designated social worker, and a designated child protection organization, and such a person must have experience, and there's a lot of other things also mentioned that such a suitable person from the criteria for such a person. Then we've got powers and duties of suitable persons. There is guidelines on that. Conditions for the examination or assessment and the consent by the child. It's very important that if a child is abused, that at least that he is addressed in a language that he understands, and that he's accompanied by a person of the child's choice. And the social worker or the social, in this case it will be a social worker and a designated social worker assessing the child, also accompanied then by a person of the child's choice. Just in very short, the National Child Protection Register is a Part A and a Part B. The Part B, the content of the Part A is in the regulation. We will notify the DG in writing by way of using the Form 25. Then the inquiries in terms of the information on the Part A of the Child Protection Register will be made to the Director General. The National Child Protection Register, that's the Part B, is still a new register that we are at this moment, well, the development starts with that is to find persons unsuitable to work with children, and those people's names will be on the Part B of the register, and such a person will be found unsuitable by a court or a forum established or recognized by law in any disciplinary proceedings concerning the conduct of what person relating to the child. Then we go to the findings which should be reported by the to the Director General, and that will be done by the staff of the court. Then the consequences to entry of the name on Part B, such a person may not be employed in any situation working with children or become a guardian or a caregiver. The establishment of information in Part B. Then the employer can make inquiry if one of these employees is on the child protection register, and the Act provides that social workers and other people can also inquire names on the Part B of the child protection register. Then the removal of the name from the register, such an application will go to the Director General, and the updating of information of party is very important. If a person whose name is on the register got the responsibility to inform the DG in terms of a change, name and address and other particulars. Protective measures relating to the health of children, consent by the minister to medical treatment, surgical operation in certain circumstances, there's consent by the child to the performance of the surgical operation, and there's also the regulation on consent in the surgical operation of a child where a parent is a child below 18 years. So that child will be assisted by his parent or guardian if the child has got a child. Other protective measures, we've described there in the regulations the duties of supervising adults in relation to the child in the household, and there's the accountability of the supervising adult regarding the administration of money specifically, because such a household will receive grants. Then into a prevention and early intervention, there's Andy Norton standards, and you can see that in the Norton standards document. In the children who need a certain protection, it's the removal of the child, detention and inside care. This is the existing form 4 that the social workers are using, and the form change is now in form 36. Then the child is brought before the court. And if a social worker must make a decision on if the child is in need of care and protection, there is a report by a designated social worker. And if you look at the regulations, there's a very comprehensive framework of the report that the social worker will have to use to find the child in need of care and protection. And this report will also go to the children's court. Abandoned or orphaned children, in the regulations there should be advertisement in national and local newspapers. Just for interest, we've received many comments on the cost of the national advertisement, and that the organizations do not, they indicate that they do not really have the money. They agree on advertisement in a local newspaper, but not in a national newspaper. In terms of alternative care, there's regulations on the approval of the certain facility place or premises for temporary child care by the HOD and the criteria for such a placement. The limitations and conditions, leave of absence, there's the fee payable to a child and youth care center, if a child is transferred from one province to another. The procedure before the transfer of the child, that's the transfer and the fees that the child are moving from one province to another, and that entails a fee in the former province as well as the new province that the child is being moved to. Procedures before the discharge of the child, and then just the manner in which children must be transferred from one residential care to another. Then there's also extensions of alternative care beyond 18 years. Foster care, responsibility for foster parents. It's the right for foster parents, participation in training programs, notice of the adoption of the foster child, the HOD to respond to certain applications, and there is a foster care plan. Then we've also received quite a lot of comments. We can offer this maybe just look at the cluster foster care. There's a registration for cluster foster care, requirements for organizations to operate the cluster foster care scheme, requirements for the scheme, content of a written plan, agreement, or articles of association, the function of the cluster foster care scheme, and the death of children in foster care, or in a cluster foster care. Chairperson, then the child and youth care centers, there was quite a lot of regulations on this. I don't think I'm going to read everything. Let me just mention the norms and standards, the rights of children, access to health, behavior management. Maybe the rest can be read in the regulation. There's complaint, how to receive the child, the register in the children's home, there's the protective files, the staff should have certain skills that's spelled out in the regulation. There must be a children's forum, there's clarity in the regulations on the responsibility of the management board, the appointment of staff, management systems, and the constitution of such a flight and in the quality assurance and performance the quality assurance, which is done by community standards in the account. Then they could adopt incentives with community standards, application for registration, consideration of the application, management, person rendering services to drop incentives, and then the functions can go to the municipality if they can render the service. Then adoptions and inter-country adoptions. I'm just going to highlight a register on adoptable children and prospective adoptive parents. Then there is also post-adoption agreement, that's important in a case like this. The adoption register is in the national department. There will also be appeals. There will be access to proceedings in the disclosure of information. There will also be fees of the strike, as well as the accreditation of such organizations, the advertisements pertaining to children, and then there will be the minister can make guidelines. Additional guidelines in terms of adoptions, and we are in the process of appointing a service provider to draw up to develop guidelines as well as community standards on the grassroots implementation of the legislation. Then the inter-country adoption, there's the accreditation, the report on the applicant. This is a new chapter, as you know. Then there is the whole question of the convention countries, the non-convention countries, and the children are coming from convention countries, non-convention countries, coming into South Africa, or going from South Africa to a convention or a non-convention country, and that's being managed by the Inter-Central Authority. At the moment, when the Act comes into operation, the Central Authority will be established. And guidelines could also be made by the Director General in terms of how we deal with inter-country adoption in more detail than is mentioned in the Act and the regulations. And the last one, Chairperson, is child trafficking. That is the prohibition of child trafficking and then the repatriation of such children. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chair.
No comment. We have some additions from the discussion. We can leave it last chairperson. If the meeting agrees, then maybe can go into a bit more detail to look at the genetic testing and the circumcision. We thought that we will maybe do that as well as the child in the household. Cancer foster care and this child and youth care centers. But I think the most important thing is maybe the genetic testing circumcision.
Before getting the genetic testing, if they've got comments on this, we should have been ready.
Madam Chair, I do not very well to comprehend the general meeting after the decision crisis. Because sometimes the meeting that the 24th. As a person from Tariq here, from the when we went to protection of the planet, I do remember that in the DDS, there is a I don't remember whether when you say that the person who is in part B cannot deal, for instance, with children, whether we mean ECD children or mean children in general, you know, the school level, from the high school level or whatever. I just want to say something. If I could take just an example of a situation, for instance, under protective measures relating to health of children. When you speak about the situation where the minister has got to confirm in certain cases, that's just trying to think, what type of cases, for instance, would a child, for instance, in Umalang or something, and they would need to write a letter to the minister, and I think I'm just thinking how long will that take? It's got to be the minister of confirm. That's what started all that.
Are you not in,
Nima?
Any other comments? Thank you.
I'm just curious to, in a situation where my baby is born of 7 days, how when you deal with a concept aspect, I mean, it's like a parent deciding what to take the child for school. I mean, that's never the child doesn't decide, parents do that. I'm just getting to that from that level where in an LAGD situation, where how the whole aspect of, or does it consist in where you are major, or you are at a level. I'm just trying to check what it says. The whole scenario will actually play itself. Thank you.
Just going back to
the
question that you I've got one or two therapeutic questions here. It's on National Child Protection Registry. Notified and write in calls to the file. This is the main therapy I can do from the inside doctor. It is in the end of the and on page 9, 65, she is able to hire a new care center. I propose that we should write to him in school because he has an abbreviation. It's only on page 11, which is fully publicly. So maybe at the first stage, so that the person who receives can understand what the abbreviation is asking. If this one was at a one page of time, the new person is not going to see. Thank you. May you respond? Honorable Philip?
Yes, just on the presentation on page 7, item 34, consent by charge to the performance of the surgical operation. I think what this is saying is just mentioned earlier on the basis as well. The baby of 7 months or 6 months not undergoing operations, but not with the issue yet. Because the safety is not yet to be expected.
Yes,
ma'am.
This is your mic on?
Chairperson, may I request that here also assist you with the patient because you were the drafter of the regulation. We sat together with that. In terms of the child protection register part B, they are not supposed to work with children. I know there was a debate at a certain stage on in terms of teachers. And I think this is a legislation provides for that. Maybe here, can you just check for us in the child protection register please? And then just what the other thing that we also found in the regulation was if it's described in the act in detail, that we it's not really again duplicated into the regulation. So it's very important to go back to the section in the legislation to just see what is there. And this is why I've mentioned that if a person was fined, let's say, in a court or a forum established, so we will have to start implementing this. But I think the ideal would be that people who maybe the legal people must excuse me with my wording. I'm a social worker, I'm not a lawyer. That such a person will not work in an ECD or in any service to a children.
I'm not sure, maybe I'm also out of work. This is the first experience I need. I have a problem that has when the regulation is basically giving detail and content on the principle within the principal head. And we want to ask questions that re-invoke debate, which we have closed. We have passed that. And my argument is, our question should be whether there's consistency between principal act and the regulations as articulated in the draft. Not to reopen the same old debate. We have closed those debates about children. We have closed all those debates about register of what. And I'm saying those were philosophical debates. The debate and questions for now, should be whether this is consistent with the principal act. Is it not introducing anything that is encroaching on the principal act? Yes, it is not there. Because the regulation must not introduce new things which are nowhere in the act. So I think I want to appeal to the if I'm correct, that you give guidance in the manner in which we should engage with this. Because I'm afraid we may be tempted to reopen the debate that we have closed for us.
This started to begin from the presented document. We are not opening new debate. Members wanted their time on this document. Were you asked when they were presenting the entire document? Only started to see questions from this statement.
But we had all these questions before and they were answered. This is my dilemma. This is my dilemma. Unless I can be currently as anybody who says, no, Connor, you are wrong. We didn't ask these questions. We did not debate them. And where we differed, we differed. Where we agreed, we agreed. Thank you.
That's the point of this debate.
Okay, can you give us a direction?
No,
I
don't
think the chairman was wanting to ask.
Honorable,
I think the essence of the question is to check in terms of the regulation, how do the regulations will turn out in reality? Because the issue is, like the question that I asked, I need to be clarified to know in terms of the application of this particular regulation in the circumstances that are great to say, how will they do it? How are the regulations trying to do that? I think this is more clarity, not changing the act, but getting clarity so that the regulations are actually clarified as well.
Thank you, Shepherd. I'm sorry, maybe I'll protect you a bit backwards, but I want clarification. It's concerning mass circumcision and this virginity testing. I agree with this part one, virginity testing, you know, concern to undergo this manner, suitability, and so forth. But now, when it comes to the mass circumcision, where we see death happening, grieving of the parents and so forth, I think here it's too limited. They just say concern to circumcision, religious circumcision here. But at least there is no suitability for the person to undergo circumcision. I don't see it yet. According to this death that always happen, at least if there is suitability of the person to undergo. Thank you very much. It's just that I'm worried because if people ask me outside, why is there a bit of a laxity when it comes to the mixed circumcision? Maybe that's why they are scared coming because I haven't heard of one single death from the genetic testing after all. But at least it's well guided. But when it comes to the mail, it just left. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ms. Nima wanted to give more input to that effect, so we'll give her opportunity to elaborate. But I just wanted to round up those chances.
I think if I can agree in the act, if you look at 1-3, in terms of where the certain focus work, that children work with or have access to children at the institution providing welfare services to children, including a child in care centre, partial care facility, a shelter or adopting centre at school, club or association providing services to children, or in implementing a classic prostitute school. So that is all the places that such a person cannot work. And then I would just like to talk about the medical consent by the minister. As far as I know, and here Mr. Sidney, that becomes a delegated school. And I think at this stage in the legislation is delegated to the chief director in the provinces. And we are still going to prepare the delegation, and that will definitely make the letter to the minister or even the national DG, so that will be a delegated function. But I would appreciate it if the lawyers will assist me with it. And then I think what we should do is perform a 25, like the patients who perform 25. And then I think we should look at the circumcision as the detail of the regulation, just to be clear on that. So can I do then I also want to say there is certain, this is a very brief presentation. I've made brief things. You know, if it's brief and late, if it's a sentence or something, not to go into detail, or else we can sit here maybe for the whole week. So this is why I'm trying to make it as brief as possible. Maybe if I do form 25, then we can go over to the circumcision and the virginity testing, but it looks as if it's mainly the circumcision that is an issue. Then 25, chairperson. That's where we, Form 25, that is in the three books that is published, that's the notification of sexual abuse, deliberate neglect, or abuse in a manner causing physical injury of a child for inclusion in Part 8 of the National Child Protection Register. In other words, that is the form that the social workers use on ground level to fill in pertaining to abuse and neglect that will go through the National Protection Register, through the provinces, up to the National Department. The information on Form 25 consists of all the details of the child, as well as the pregnancy. Then it's information about the alleged perpetrator, its name, physical address, the relationship to the child, where does the abuse take place. So it is in a form format. Third one is the parent or caregiver of the child, in which care the child was when the abuse happened. Then four is the person with whom the child was living at the time of the incident. And that is true name, it's the address, it's the gender, it's the age, it's the relationship to the child. So the whole form has got in the separate components all the information in terms of everybody, let's say, around this abuse, that is like around the abuse. Then there's a component 5, the nature and account of the incident. It's also the date, the source of the report, the place of the incident. And then there's the indicators also. And the indicators that mentioned there in terms of did the child have cut or was there poisoning or irritation or whatever, that is also mentioned in the regulations. If you go to the regulations, it is regulation 44.1b, everything that's mentioned there was taken up into the regulation, into the form. There's Is the action taken on behalf of the child? We examined the child, was the child hospitalized, and all the contact persons of the people around the child. Then there is also a component 7, the child force intervention, if there was any intervention. There's also 6 information that is needed from staff, the actions that they took against the alleged perpetrator. Then 9 is the child known to the welfare organization, the social development, and then lastly, there is some other information in itself. For informing yourself, and this is the person then referred the case. So it's quite a comprehensive form in this part. So, chairperson, can we maybe then go to the question on where are we now? Yeah, with circumcision. We can just get on with the It is there on the board now. Do we have... No. We've got first the genetic testing. Let's just go to circumcision there. It's part 2 of chapter 2 in the published document. Content of... this is the genetic testing. Let me do the genetic testing also there. Let's do the genetic testing first. So the first one is, on the document that you've got is page 9. Okay, then. Of the one that we gave you. Yes, and the one-stick document. The one-stick document. Page 9, It's chapter 2, social and cultural and religious practices. Okay, there it is. You can see it now there and all over the place. Content to undergo the genetic. I'm going to read it to you now. Content to undergo the genetic test by a child who's 16 years of age or older must be in a form substantially corresponding with form 1. So in other words, this is where we're going to start using the form and must be completed in writing as signed by the child, signed by the person conducting the genetic test, and accompanied by proof of the age of the child as provided for in regulation 4.3.3. 2, where a person whose signature is required in terms of paragraph A or B or sub-regulation 1 incapable of furnishing a signature, a thumbprint must be accepted and duly attested by the Commissioner of Oath. 3, this was something new that we put in after the comments. You will see that it's underlined. A child who is 16 years of age or older and who has a disability, a chairperson throughout the regulations we include disability, where we receive the comments on that. The disability related to brain damage is rendered the said child incapable of making a decision regarding the genetic test, as well as the child with multiple disabilities is not able to make such a decision, must be assisted in this regard by a parent, guardian, caregiver, or a social service professional. 4, that's now a new one that we put up in proposed should go in. There's 4, a copy of the form referred to in sub-regulation 1 must be obtained by the person performing the genetic test for a period. Initially, it was proposed 12 months, but we proposed it should be 3 years. So that is underlined. After consent that contemplated in this regulation has been furnished. Then we go to 4, the manner in conducting the genetic test. The person who conducts the genetic test must ensure that each child is tested individually and in private. Such a test is conducted. conducted in a hygienic manner, which includes the use of sterile surgical gloves for each test in the site of a virginity test involving the penetration was in the regulations we propose that we don't bring a penetration out and that we put infection in of any bodily orifice of the child being tested. The disposal of such surgical gloves after each virginity test in accordance with medical standards for the disposal of surgical gloves, the sterilization of any instrument used in the performance of any virginity test in accordance with acceptable medical practice and the avoidance of direct blood contact. The contact with any bodily fluid between the child undergoing the virginity test and the person performing the virginity test. And the least invasive means of testing for virginity is used with due regard to the child's vital bodily integrity. Two, a virginity test may only be performed on a girl child by a female person or on a boy child by a male person. We propose out of the permit that we receive that we also have to see the boy child first. Yeah. See, no virginity test may be performed on a child unless the person conducting the test satisfied that the child from 2 to 16 years of age or older. The age of the child consenting to virginity test must be established by having regard to an identity document, a birth certificate, an affidavit furnished by the child's parent or caregiver concerning the age of the child, or an estimation of age contemplated in section 482 of the Act. So it's very important to listen to always go down to the Act information. Or any person who contravenes any provision of this information is guilty of an offence and is liable on conviction of a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years or to both such fine and such imprisonment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Samuel, I think we understood that members that can go through on their own. And if you can just go to the voucher.
My second decision. That is section 8.
Well, Mary, do you want to say something?
My concern was in the next circumcision.
No, it's going there.
Oh, it is going there.
Yes.
I'm sorry for that.
Consent by a male child over the 16 years. Circumcision must be in a form substantially corresponding to form 3, so it's important to give it to a free care center. 9 is the religious circumcision. The circumcision is formed for the religious purposes on male children under the age of 16 years. Must be performed in accordance with the practice of the religion concerned and must be performed by a medical practitioner or by a person from the religion concerned who has been properly trained to perform the circumcision. The medical practitioner will first contemplate the vaccination 1 must ensure that sterile surgical gloves are worn and instruments used during the circumcision in the post or after each circumcision unless sterilized in accordance with medical standards for the sterilization of the instrument with no direct blood contact or any contact in terms of body fluids. With any foreign substance, the child undergoing the circumcision and the person performing the circumcision, and then the disposal of the air or any other person or child. And then the disposal of any instrument used for circumcision, including any human tissue, must be in compliance with any applicable legal provision. Then, 3, consent to the religious circumcision of the male child under the age of 12 years. Or over the age of 12 years, but below the age of 18 years. It is proposed that we include the following. It must be given by both parents the consent of the male child, and when more than one person has a guardianship of the child, where a parental responsibility and rights agreement exists. Both persons must be in a form substantially corresponding with the child.
Thanks for that, but the concern of me to be like I said, why so many deaths for male circumcision? Do we have any regulation to this for this prevention?
Not specifically. Specifically, the draft of
my analytical papers not real, and I need to go up and see. He, when goes back to the act was not to list us to regulate methods concerning the and the regulations cannot proceed beyond what is authorized by the Principal Act. We also sit with the issue that there is provincial legislation in at least four provinces dealing with circumcision schools or initiation schools, and regulations cannot be perceived or regulate further regulation.
So Mr. Nipah has on the chair and goes to Goldman Village and so forth. Does not have the intention of this act to regulate the constitution? The public discourse, why people are that different in that situation, why people are dying there, and all those things, and the defense system on the part of those who are steeped in that cult. No, look, it's the private and all those kind of things. So you must not very careful, chapter. That's why I was saying, really, I don't know, I know it's a complex incident. We must really be careful not to drag into other underlying philosophical issues that were supposed to belong to the principal act, and want to assume then that the regulations must address them. That was my fear, and I still maintain it's a legitimate fear. That's why initially I wrote on this matter. Thank you very much.
I want to give, with due respect, Mandy, I want to give the Justice Department a full opportunity because they've requested. Then we'll elaborate further on that. Honorable Speaker, earlier on the Justice Department requested that you must give the first presentation. But unfortunately, we didn't have their document. The actual engagement, let us give them an opportunity to present. Over to you, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. Much appreciated. Chair, right at the beginning, mention was made of Section 3 of the Act to say that all regulations and within the event of conflict, but there's Section 3C, which says that all regulations that are made and which affect provinces must be approved by the NCOP. I don't want to venture a legal opinion, but that's something that my colleague from Social Development can have a look at. My personal view, as far as the justice regulations are concerned, I don't think they have to be approved by the NCOP because I don't think they will affect provinces. I would like to raise that. As I say, Chair, the regulations are in a draft form. They've reached a particular stage. I would like to give a sense of what has gone on until now in terms of preparation of the regulations before I actually get to the regulations themselves. I would like to think that as well, I would like to inform the committee that there's been considerable consultation on the justice regulations. We're not complete yet. And we hope that we also get inputs from this committee, which will help us in the finalization of the regulation. To give you, committee, a sense of who we've approached for comment, formal requests went out to members of the judiciary, the Chief Justice, the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal, Judges President, Magistrates Commission, Registers of the High Court, the regional heads in our department, and the Office of the Family Advocate, and we work closely with our colleagues in Social Development, participate in the Children's Act Steering Committee of the Department of Social Development. Justice College has been involved, both the sheriff and the legal profession. And as was indicated right at the beginning of this meeting, these justice regulations were also published together with Social Development regulations. The comments that we received in that process, as well as the other comments that we received, have been incorporated into the regulations where necessary. the Minister for Justice and Constitutional Development makes regulations for two chapters. The first chapter is to
Section 75, the Minister of Justice must consult with the Minister of Social Development on those regulations before they can be made. That formal consultation process must take place. Strangely enough, the second chapter that Justice is required to make regulations on is Chapter 17 that deals with international child abduction. There, the Minister of Justice makes the regulations and there's no requirement for consultation with anybody else. I just mentioned that in passing. Chair, I'm not going to be long. The regulations that Justice is required to make are really formalistic regulations. They deal with a whole range of very detailed nitty-gritty. They can almost be mundane, but they are extremely important. If one has a look at Section 75 of the Act, that's in relation to children's court proceedings. What must the Minister of Justice make regulations about? Let me mention a few just to remind you. Must make regulations regarding the procedures to be followed as to in connection with the proceedings of children's courts and the powers and duties and functions of clerks of children's courts. Must make regulations regarding all sorts of forms. Must make regulations regarding the carrying out and monitoring of investigations, the holding of pre-hearing conferences, the holding and monitoring of family group conferences and other lay forums, qualifications and experience of persons facilitating family group conferences, documents in connection with matters brought to a children's court and records of the proceedings of children's courts, the keeping of records, submission of court statistics and progress reports on matters before children's courts to the magistrate's commission, the payment of remuneration to persons who are not in the employ of the state and who carry out certain functions. Those are the type of issues that regulations are required to be made on. Section 280, that's now Chapter 17 of the Act, that deals with international child abduction. What must the Minister of Justice make regulations about? There are two main categories: to give effect to the provisions of the Hague Convention on International Child Abduction and prescribing fees and providing for the recovery of any expenditures incurred in connection with the application of that convention. Then there are a few specific provisions in the Act which require a regulation. Section 48.2 of the Act provides that a children's court may, for the purposes of the Act, estimate the age of a child, of the age of a person who appears to be a child in the prescribed manner. Chair, I'd like to stop there just for a little bit. There is a proposed regulation there. The principal Act says that a children's court may estimate the age of a child. Now that means when we go to the regulations are limited to dealing with the estimation of the age of a person that appears to be a child. And the question is raised whether the Act at an appropriate stage shouldn't be amended to change estimation to determination when that can be done. And I'm using previous experience when we dealt with the Child Justice Act. A children's court and a court normally determines the age of a child, not estimates. So I'm saving this just for consideration when that can be done. We can have a look at the possibility of amending that provision so that our regulation can be, and our provision here can be in line with what happens in practice. Section 52 of the Act provides that an investigation or further investigation must be carried out in accordance with any prescribed procedures. Section 57 of 1 of the Act provides that the clerk of the children's court may, by written notice in the prescribed manner, request a party in a matter before children's court, a family member of a child involved in the matter, or a person who has another interest in the matter to attend the proceedings of the children's court. Section 59.1 provides that the clerk of the children's court must, in the prescribed manner, summon the person to appear as a witness. Section 63.1 provides that a written report compiled and signed by a medical practitioner, psychologist, family advocate, designated social worker, or other suitably qualified person providing an opinion on the child is on the production in a children's hearing admissible as evidence of the facts stated in that report. But Section 63.2 provides that the written report must be submitted to the children's court within the prescribed period, so we need a regulation for that. And then lastly, Section 67 provides that the Director General must or may for every children support appoint or designate one or more officials in the Justice Department, or may appoint one or more persons in the prescribed manner on the prescribed conditions as clerks of the Children's Court, and then assist the Children's Court, so regulations are required for that. So I'm going back a bit into what the Act is saying, and you can refresh memories, and you'll see that really the issues that the Minister of Justice is required or is required to prescribe are formalistic and quite often administrative in nature. Chairman, to turn to the regulations themselves, you will note that the draft regulations have been divided into five chapters. I'm not going to go into detail in all of these. What I can do for the benefit of the if the committee members would like that, Chair, I can make my briefing notes available where it goes into more detail. But I don't want, and I know that my colleagues in social development have got a lot more to say about their regulations, and I don't want to take up unnecessary time. Chapter 1 of the regulations, I'm not going to deal with it. It contains a number of definitions. Chapter 2 deals with class of the children's court, and I'll just briefly go over that. Is my approach correct? Please stop me if I'm... Chapter 2, you have a look at draft regulation 2. That deals with the application for appointment as a clerk. Any person who wishes to become a clerk of the children's court must complete a particular form. And that form, I think, is Form 1. Draft regulation 3 deals with the appointment requirements of a clerk of a children's court. What it basically says that an applicant as a clerk of the children's court must comply with the appointment requirements in the Public Service Act and the policies for a post of administrative clerk in the department. Draft regulation 4 deals with the conditions of appointment of clerks, and what the regulation provides is that a person may be appointed for the period agreed to between the Director General of the Justice Department and the applicant, is in any title to an all-inclusive remuneration package equal to what a clerk would get in the Department of Justice. Draft Regulation 5 deals with functions, powers, and duties of clerks. And let me just mention a few examples. This regulation requires clerks to open files in a specific manner, keep the filing system in a specific manner, keep registers of cases before the court, and also to give assistance to persons to complete forms, just to generally assist the members of the public and inform witnesses of the witnesses to which they're entitled. That's Chapter 2, Chair. Then we go on to Chapter 3, and that deals with children's court. And this chapter has been divided into two parts. The first part deals more with proceedings in children's court, and then the second part of that chapter deals with the different types of investigations and forums which are provided in the Act in order to assist children's courts. In Chapter 2, we have Draft Regulation 6, and that deals with how a matter must be brought to a children's court. A person who wishes to bring a matter to court must notify the clerk of the intention to do so, and must complete a particular form, and that form is set out in that Form 1 of the Annexes to the regulations. So a person who wishes to bring the matter to a children's court falls in Form 1 of the annexure to the regulations. What draft regulation 6 also says that within 5 days after the receipt of the notice by the applicant, the clerk must refer that matter to a presiding officer, and then the presiding officer must, within 7 days of getting that documentation, fly his or her mind and make an order whether the matter should either be referred for mediation to a family group conference or to a lay forum, or for a pre-hearing conference, or the presiding officer may decide that the matter should go directly to court. So that's draft regulation 6. Draft regulation 7 deals with the attendance of proceedings. If the matter is to be heard in court, the presiding officer must assign a date for the matter to be heard and a specific time frame is put there. The clerk of the court must then inform the parties on a prescribed form to attend the proceedings of court, and this regulation also deals with the manner of service of the notice on the people who must attend. I then move on to draft regulation 8. Now, as I've mentioned, there are specific time periods that are mentioned in the regulation. The presiding officer must sign a date within so many days. A clerk of the court must give documentation to different functionaries within so many days. So there are various time periods that are set. Draft regulation deals with deviations from the set time period, and this relates more to parties to children's court. And a party to children's court proceedings may, in terms of regulation. Thank you, Chair. Main writing request for a deviation of the time period. Draft regulation 9 deals with the subpoenaing or summoning of witnesses, and a draft regulation 10 deals with the estimation of the age of the child, which I've already touched on, so I won't go into any more detail. Then we go on to part 2, I think, of the of that chapter. Draft regulation deals with investigations, and my limited time, I really am not going to go through any more great detail. It sets out what is required to be done. Draft regulation 12 deals with pre-hearing conferences. Draft regulation 13 deals with family group conferences. What is required to be done, and I think my notes that I will make available to the world will set out the details. I really am just going through very quickly now to finish my briefing. Draft regulation 14 deals with a lay forum, and that then concludes chapter 3. Chapter 4, another important chapter, deals with international child abduction. To a large extent, I must say that the regulations that were in place under the Hague Convention Act of 1996 were kept intact. Changes were, however, made. We wrote in the expertise of Judge Belinda van Heerden of the Supreme Court of Appeal, who is an expert on these matters, and she gave us valuable comments. In this chapter, you have Draft Regulation 15, which deals with an application for the return of a child under Article 8 of the Convention from another contracting state to the public. It sets out what an application must comply with. Draft Regulation 16 deals with an application to access to a child who has been wrongfully removed to the public. It provides that an application must be in writing and submitted to any family advocate's office. That application must then be forwarded to the chief family advocate, who is the central authority who must bring an application under the convention to the High Court. Draft Regulation 17 deals with an application to have a child returned to a contracting state under the convention. It provides that if a child has been wrongly removed to South Africa or retained in South Africa, the central authority must, within 10 days after the child has been located, bring an application to the High Court on behalf of the parent that's been left behind to have the child returned to his country that he came from. Draft Regulation 18 deals with the appointment of persons by the Chief Family Advocate to assist in giving effect to the convention. Regulation 19 provides that a person who hinders a family advocate from exercising powers in terms of the convention is guilty of an offence. Draft Regulation 20 deals with court appearances and provides that the important regulation provides that the chief family advocate or a family advocate must appear on behalf of an applicant in any court proceeding that may be necessary to give provision, irrespective of the provisions of the convention, where the applicant does not qualify for legal aid, or the applicant doesn't wish to appoint a legal representative of his or her own choice. Draft Regulation 21 provides for the payment of fees who are not employed in the state and to give assistance to the chief family advocate. Draft Regulation 22 deals with the recovery of expenditure and provides that when application for the return of a child has been successful, the state may recover from the applicant the expenses incurred in bringing about the return of the child. And Regulation 23 deals with the speedy finalisation of proceedings under the convention and provides that proceedings for the return of the child under the convention must be completed within 6 weeks from the date on which the proceedings were instituted in the High Court. Regulation 24 deals with procedure in the High Court. And Regulation 25 deals with certain declarations that the High Court may make as confirmation. contemplated in the convention, and I won't go into any detail. Regulation 26 deals with proof of documents and evidence, and Regulation 27 deals with the power of the High Court to order the disclosure of the child's whereabouts where difficulty is being experienced. And it provides that when proceedings for return of a child, there's no adequate information as to where the child is, the court may order any person whom it has reason to believe may have relevant information to disclose it to the court. I'm going to skip to Clause 28 and Clause 29. They're really formalistic and they deal with formal issues in court. Regulation 30 provides that the court may not adjourn a hearing of an application for more than 15 days any one time. And draft regulation 31 provides for assistance in order to prevent the removal of a child from the Republic. A parent can apply to the central authority for that assistance, and the central authority will then call in the assistance of tax to inform, for example, a border post. That there's a threat that a child might be removed unlawfully from the Republic. Regulation 32 provides that the High Court may order the surrender of a passport to prevent a child from being removed. And that then concludes Chapter 4. Chapter 5 deals with a whole lot of miscellaneous issues, for instance, the keeping of records, submission of statistics by the courts, by the children's courts to the magistrates, commission, and the remuneration of persons who assist the courts and who are not in the employ of the state. It also deals with forms that must be prescribed, contribution orders, and it prescribes some offences and penalties. I really have been very, very scantily said that, as I say, I can make my notes available and then there is more fish to what's contained in what I've already said. And then there are 15 annexes. That are referred to in the various regulations, and these contain the forms that need to be filled in for various purposes. So I hope I haven't been too brief, but with time available, I think that's where I'm going to see it.
Okay,
you
are left with 33, 37, 39, 4. If you can just tell us on the contribution order, okay, now go back for the department. Thank you very much. I'm not going to open for members' comments and questions, but I just want to start with the state law advisor if you want to comment.
Thank you, Shepherdson. We have looked at the app. As for now, there's nothing that is wrong with the regulation. Coming to the question of the Director General, which was raised before regarding the executive role or with regard to regulation and the parliamentary role. Yes, we did have an informal discussion with the Director General this morning, and normally the regulations are under jurisdiction of the executive, but sometimes it's good for the law generally if the NCOP or Parliament in general wants to have or to take part in the formulation of the regulation. I didn't say anything though, but it was an informal view. There's no formal view of the office with regard to that, as for now.
Thank you very much. Indeed,
we
can't debate it because it's already enough in the parliament. Thank you very much, Department of Justice. Thanks for coming. Let me take it back to the department to round it up.
Yes. Can you be excused? We're also involved in another committee.
Yes, yes. That's why I have to thank you. Thank you very much for the issue. that, let me say, members, you agree on the input from the justice. Agree. Thank you. Department of Social Development. Thank you.
as the case may be, which designated the adult to supervise the child in the household. Together with such original documents, for example, receipts, invoices, and other documentation that may serve as proof of the extremity of the child. And then two, the clerk of the children's court, the organ of state, or the non-governmental organization, which designated the adult, referred to in subsection 1, may, upon the absence of a counter signature as contemplated in sub-regulation, or if there is a reason to suspect that there is a misappropriation or maladministration of money, cause the matter to be investigated and may take such steps as may be required by the circumstances, including the institution of criminal charges against such an adult and the replacement of such adult by another supervising adult. So that is the regulation mainly to manage child care outcomes. So that one,
let's just continue.
I want to, yeah, if I may, discuss the cost of the and that is clause 76. Quite a long part too. I'm not going to go into all the details. Okay, so I'll just start the chairperson with your permission. Okay, the registration of the cluster foster care scheme managed or operated by a non-governmental organization must be registered with the provincial department. And we will, in that case, use the form 45. Application for the registration of a cluster foster care scheme must be accompanied by proof of identification of the NGO, the name or names of the cluster foster care scheme, and one centralized address, a description of the manner in which the cluster foster care scheme will provide services and programs, details of the number of children that the scheme proposes to support the cluster foster care, and where applicable, any further identifying details concerning the children whom the scheme proposes to receive in cluster foster care, including but not limited to details concerning any special needs such children may have, the age, ages of such children, more details concerning the language and cultural background of such children, then details concerning the geographical area and geography, and details concerning the manner in which active members will be recruited to assume responsibility for such a scheme. Then H, details concerning the management of the scheme, including the financial management, description of any program or programs to be delivered under the scheme, details concerning the employment of a social worker or worker for a social service professional, the names of the office bearers of the non-profit organization operating such a scheme, clearance certificate to the effect that the names of any office bearers of the non-profit organization operating or managing the cluster foster care scheme do not appear on Part B of the register of the national of the National Register of Sex Offenders established in terms of the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act. And evidence of entire expertise in the delivery of services to children, sufficient other details of the non-profit organization or the proposed operation of the non-profit foster care scheme. 3. On granting an application referred to into the provincial head of social development must issue to the applicant a certificate of legislation in terms of Form 46. In granting an application referred to into the provincial head of social development might impose such conditions as he or she deems necessary. In rejecting an application for legislation to foster care scheme, the SOD must duly inform the applicant of the rejection in the form 47 by registered post and must furnish a reason for the rejection. If an applicant whose application has been rejected by the provincial head of social development may appeal to the MEC in the way of Form 48, then a non-profit organization seeks registration for more than one class of foster care schemes, operating in accordance with sustainability, the same principles in substantiality, the same manner as the previous one, or the first one. A provincial department of social development may deregister a registered class of foster care scheme on due form shown, provided that 60 days' notice is given to the class of foster care scheme of the intention of deregistering such a scheme. The notice referred to an 8 must be in form 49. So in this clause, it's very clear that there's quite a lot of forms involved. 7.7, a requirement with which organizations managing and operating such a foster care scheme must comply. The non-profit organization managing such a foster care scheme must annually submit a report to the provincial department concerning the scheme under its management or operation, detailing in respect of each such scheme, annual financial report, number of children, a description of the manner in which the trust of foster care scheme operates, details of the child protection services rendered, details concerning the delivery of programs to support the children, any details concerning the provision of services to meet the needs of the children with special needs, generally the extent to which the rights of children in such a foster care have been met and achievements made. Challenges experience. The report must be in format of Form 50, and organization managing, or operating a registered trust of foster care must submit to monitoring by the provincial department of social development. An organization managing or operating a trust of foster care must ensure that adherence to the names of any active members providing foster care should not be on Part B of the register. The organization managing or operating a registered trust of foster care scheme must in it employ at least one person registered as a social worker with a council of social service profession, at least no less than one registered social worker for the appropriate number of children as specified in the North Standard. We want to add there an organizational managing or operating a trust of foster care scheme may not employ active members to be foster parents or include contracts with active members which resemble employment contracts. An organization managing and operating a foster trust scheme must ensure that the transfer of children between foster parents who are active members on the scheme is carried out in accordance with the procedure. If you like to be 171 of the Act. Requirements of which a scheme providing such a foster care must comply, a foster care scheme must have a name and one centralized address. A cluster foster care scheme may not accommodate more than 6 children with an active member or a couple. A cluster foster care scheme must keep a proper financial record. A cluster foster care scheme must limit the numbers of active members physical address to no more than 3 active members in the scheme. Trusted foster care schemes must operate or be managed according to a written plan, agreement, or articles of association containing the details of the financial management, the programs and services to be delivered in terms of the plan. Excuse me. The written plan, agreement, or the articles must contain sufficient details. The written plan, agreement, must contain details of how the disputes will be dealt with. The written plan agreement must contain details as to the management of the behavior of the children in the scheme. Thank you. Thank you. Seven is the 9 day. Providing child protection services must register the deputy crisis as a deputy crisis child protection organization. We must operate under the auspices of one. Cluster foster team must ensure, monitor how any social assistance grant or any other grant received by active members assigned responsibility for the foster care or are utilized. In other words, this is on how they are spending the grants and how the monitoring will take place. 11, a mechanism by which foster children in a cluster foster care team can report any complaints regarding abuse or exploitation must be contained in a written plan, agreement, or articles of association. Cluster foster care team must provide the necessary programs for children in such schemes and to enable foster carers who are active members of the team to provide suitable care for the children. Then, it's only 2 pages still to go for the content of the written plan or the agreement. The written plan or agreement must include the details written by the cluster foster care team manager or he or her designated subordinate into the household. There must be a minimum norms and standards regarding the physical environment, nutrition, healthcare, education, the independent decision-making functions and capacities, roles and responsibilities must be spelled out to the active members, and then details as to cost sharing or cost saving mechanisms to be adopted to the benefit of the program. Then 18, functioning of a cluster foster care team. A cluster foster care team must promote the best interests of the children. They must provide programs, services, or support, which provide support, mentoring, supervision, and advice to active members in the organization. It must require the active members of the organization to whom responsibility for foster care of children has been assigned, to ensure that the children in a foster care scheme benefit from educational services, including ECD, exceptional children. Require the active members of the organization to whom the responsibilities have been assigned to ensure that the children benefit from available health services. Require the active members of the organization to fulfill the needs of the children in cluster foster care with special needs, chronic illness, or a disability, including by providing psychosocial rehabilitation and therapeutic programs for children. Also require the active member to fulfill the social, cultural, and religious needs between children in cluster foster care, assisting the active members of the organization during responsibility for foster care, children at any time, including the providing access to income generation projects and skills development programs. Ensuring that a care plan is compiled in respect of the child in the team as soon as possible, but not later than initially it was 7 days. We propose 21 days after the child's placement in the custody of the team. Require the active member to ensure that the rights of children in a cluster foster care are respected, protected, promoted, and fulfilled. And then we propose that the following is included: develop appropriate parenting skills and the capacity of active members of the organization to safeguard the well-being of children, including the promotion of positive, non-violent forms of discipline, which is really important to children. Prevent the neglect, exploitation, abuse, or inadequate supervision of children, and preventing other failures to meet children's needs on the part of active members of the organization. Assist the active members of the organization to obtain the basic necessities of life themselves, including by providing access to income generation projects. I could really read that in a previous one. Assist a young person with a transition when needing cluster foster care after reaching the age of 18. Involve active members of the organization as well as the children in cluster foster care in identifying and seeking solutions to their problems. 81, the death of the children in a foster structure, foster phase 2, the death of any child in foster or in a structure, foster phase 2, must be reported to the Provincial Department of Social Development within 14 days, for which the child 48 hours by the foster parent or by the non-profit organization managing the foster housing structure. Provincial Department of Social Development must establish and maintain a record of the deaths and release of children in foster care or in child care. Thank you, President. That's the class of foster care. Yeah, I can go on, Chair President. I can go on for a long time, but if you members will go through the documents and there will be more satisfied.
Thank you, Chair. No, I was just thinking quickly now that the department is recommending to report the letter within 48 hours. Now, from a religious point of view, especially in the Muslim community, you would like to bury the child earlier than within 48 hours of notification. So maybe that is something the department must just revisit. We can say within 6 or 12 hours of everything.
Very
important.
But it's about the reporting of the day. Yeah. It's under the reporting. Don't worry about it. Okay. I know what you said. You'll make a note of that.
I'm not going to open the question and tell you. Yes, because there was an indication you never encounter it to say this and act now. Don't you must involve any questions and charity to me because we'll be opening the case. So I'm trying not to.
Yeah, but I think the purpose of asking questions is based on the regulation. It is not based on whether I want to change the act or not. If the question is can be answered in an act or request to say this girl is in the act, it's a matter of trying to reject the question that the criminal is asked. It's irrelevant.
Okay, come up with your point.
Yes. My other point was not answered. The question was asked to deal with. The conversation I asked, about 12 years, and there's nothing below that. Where I'm saying that the conversation isn't done before that age. What do you do with the regulation there? If you remember, that's it. Because what I've seen here, if you are 12 and less than 18, but there's nothing that deals with the period before that time. Because some religion or some cultures use the conversation very early in life, maybe a few months once you're born. It was related to context to say, how do you deal with that? And is there anything that the clinician relates in the regulation to address that? Okay. The other question that the Tudeman raised for the company, it was part of
Honorable
Tudeman.
Yes. Tudeman out of this.
The issue that you touch is well in touch. My question in terms of regulation is a better idea. The death of a child in a foster care. I'm not sure what happens to the barrier. Assuming that the child is a barrier, I'm just curious to say, because your reporting to the provincial department within 14 days is about this child who is here no more. But I'm not sure how then do we take care of the barrier. Is it within the foster care responsibility? Or I'm just curious, I'm thinking aloud on it and I'm trying to say what then that will be. Yes. Except that there's one clarity. No, I think I'm fine. Thank you.
Chairperson, can I ask Professor Julia just to talk about the certain students being younger than 12 years? And then in terms of the value of the child, it depends on if the child is got parents or not. So I think if there's not parents, then I think it's a safe responsibility. Just to refer to two particular provisions of the Act, namely Section 12, which deals with social, cultural, and religious practices, but also Section 129, which deals with consent to medical treatment. I'm going to put the two together. Section 12 talks about circumcision of male children older than the age of 16. It can only be performed after the child has given consent, that would be a 16 or 17 year old, in the prescribed manner. And we have prescribed the manner in which that form must be given, and after proper counseling of the child. Otherwise, circumcision of children under the age of 16 is prohibited according to the Act, except where it's a religious circumcision in accordance with the practices of the religion. And in that case, the ordinary rules, common law rules of consent with a side, which means that a 7-day-old baby consent will be given by the parents or guardian. And the same applies to subsection D, which is a circumcision performed for medical reasons on the recommendation of a medical practitioner. That does not require regulations, and again, the common law with a side there, which would be generally speaking that where young children are concerned, it will be the consent of the parents or guardian. And as the child proceeds to the age of 12, 12 being the age mentioned in Section 129, as the age of which children can consent to medical treatment, just to further elaborate very briefly, Section 169 did not actually explicitly require regulations on children's consent to medical treatment. But we felt that because this is entirely new, that medical personnel will have to get children's consent over the age of 12, and medical treatment especially, that we needed to develop regulations to assist medical practitioners to know how to ask children for their consent. And where parental assistance is required, just to make sure that that's.
Thank you very much.
How long is it going to take to finalize the draft? You may have an idea. Last moment.
The regulations are finalized, as you can see. We've already accommodated all the comments for the public comments that we received. We've incorporated them. All we need is just to print them out. We just to the top to have them very professionally, and then they need to be sent to the real I'm not saying that you have to go to the treasury because the act has been, the whole act amended has been costed. So it's like to just here for money to exception of the NCOP and the state law authorities.
Because according to the our program, this is the last year to celebrate. So we'll be meeting any next year.
So on our own, I'm sure we need to do it. It's the same thing that we think needs to be taken up with the department. But for now, I think we know them and I think we'll do it.
Thank you very much.
Just
to
I'm not doing what other people told us to do. My intervention is premised on my initial intervention of whether these regulations do conflict with any existing regulation or law in the province. That's my starting point. And I don't want to open a debate on that. Chair, I was with you in Germany, I was with you in Australia, there are over 100 deaths, they are not Democrats. And please do not bother themselves. In Germany, where they don't. Legal services at Parliament must alert us that this particular provision of the regulation is not consistent with the principal legislation. No, those kind of things. That's how everyone does, because they're not engaging with the philosophical and policy trajectory or content. That is in the principal legislation. So, as always, what happens, I'll propose one. Let's know the content and the presentation. Then advocate Mukesh, your task with whoever are your stakeholders, is to firstly make a determination. We don't have a mandate, because even constitutionally, as I said, provinces can adopt this thing. There should be another process if they eat it, where province says this thing doesn't conflict with anything of ours, can approve it. So I think we need to take care of those processes. So that is the way for the person that I propose. No, then legal services must go through this thing. The draft, that is the draft is the task of the thinking of the department in terms of. I don't think your final draft plan is going to depart fundamentally from this one. And I really want to say that let's occupy ourselves with this one from the social development. That is not really exclusive national competency. There's no debate about that. The exclusive national competence, Department of Justice. Well, we can do it as a matter of interest, but I don't think it really applies on section 164 IF. So that is the process that I follow, that maybe from your five chairperson, alert provinces that there's this kind of regulation, and that it must begin to react, whether really, in terms of the test, constitutional test, whatever, say, yes, you have regulations in conflict, or we don't have, we are in approval, so that when we come back next year, we don't sidetrack. We don't prolong the process unnecessarily. This is my proposal, Chairperson. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Indeed,
that's
it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We are happy with the feedback we've received from the committee by way of questions of clarity that have been posed, and I hope that all of them, if not most, have been sufficiently covered. We would be keen, of course, to have this set of regulations promulgated as soon as possible. And for that process to be assisted, we will need to ensure that these regulations are presented to the chairperson of the SOP as soon as possible.
also then that would require some information to be made available to us with regard to when the committee is likely to sit early in the new year, so that we can interact with the committee and then have this matter finalized, so that after that, before members of the committee go out to do other work relating to the first part of 2009. Yes, that we are able then to have this regulation come out there. Once that information is communicated to us as to when the committee is going to sit, we will endeavor to secure a time mutually suitable for us to come and present to the committee, whatever is left. What is unclear, of course, is in what form the NCOP is going to consider these regulations for approval. Whether it means members of the NCOP representing various provinces would need to go back to seek a mandate on whether or not to approve. It's something I'm not very certain about. But it's something that I hope the legal advisors of the NCOP or this committee can assist on, so that when we interact in the new year, there is clarity of process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, we'll do that. Okay. You want to speak after the DG? I thought that we'll come up with that for like the
protocol. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say, not because some of the members of the leader, we can do this in quick, but I think when you look at Section 2, and it requires us to consult with other government departments, I think we need to finalize this internal looking at departments. So this is the input of other government departments. And then we can submit it formally before the NCOP. Unlike where we submit it here, other government departments come up with certain things again, and we now don't get any of the funding for that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for that point. We'll hear from the department whenever they should be ready, and also we'll do our homework for the provincial input. We'll come back to you as soon as we come back in January. Because I think the committee will start working in January. And then we'll put you on the priority list. Fortunately, we don't have any legislation in front of this committee. But then we are finalizing three of them tomorrow for the department. So you have to be the only one to be on training when you come back. Number one. Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to thank you, honorable members, because I could see members today, they are not in the working mood. But thanks for the department for coming and being in particular. We are aware that you are feeling very, very busy. Thanks for coming. Rico, can you announce where the lunch is? And I hope it's not a single lunch
today. City lunch.
Okay. You are all invited for a lunch. Lunch is late. The next day, starting from now after 10. The meeting is done again. Thank you very much. Hmm?